Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this episode of Masonic Home Companion. It's an absolute pleasure. We're closing in on the tilting point, aren't we? Today, if the world has come to an end, then you and I are the remaining survivors. I think that speaks well about mankind, that we don't have the Leafs surviving with us. We have not lost our sense of humor. We have, let's take all things Masonic seriously, but never ourselves. With all due respect to our Mayan brethren everywhere, some of us have not finished our work. They may claim that it's the end of days, but in fact, the media took over again and did what it usually does. Made a bit of a hasty porridge out of some facts and distorted some information about calculations. And my goodness, the Mayan calendar was one of the more complicated wheel-within-a-wheel types of configurations that could be imagined. There is still much to be done. We need to carry on beyond the end of time, apparently. Don't let us stop your endeavors on the end of days, though. Go right ahead. Do what you have to do. If this is the day when the world comes to an end for you, well, so be it. We are still getting over the end of the millennium, being the end of time, but we are always looking for new challenges. That was 2000. I'm sure some of you boys have a stockpile of Kool-Aid that you put into place. And back then, waiting for the for time to come to an end in the Hadron Collider to rip apart the molecular structure of the universe and send us all back to where? To where we came from? Send us home, I guess. Many people around the world joined together around the time of solstice in homage to the prophets. Let this Christmas season embrace you in a spirit of renewal, endurance, and faith to carry us through when darkness befalls us. The Sonic Home Companion always has room for one more visitor. Let me greet you in true Masonic fashion while you sit back and enjoy a chat with friends. Let me recall a time not so long ago in life for a second. Just because winter is on our mind here in Canada right now. Yellowknife, It was home to us for the Graham family for a while. It celebrates the longest night in style. The stars and northern lights that just don't seem to stop. Friendly people everywhere. And I remember a particular night when there was a comet, a full moon, and the northern lights in the heavens. And they were all visible at the same time. And it was a very spiritual moment. Something that I wish every one of you could experience sometime in your life. But the hospitality of the people, where people don't mention that it's cold because they look at you puzzled, and the comeback is, well, it's the Arctic. In true Canadian fashion, what do you expect? It's cold? Oh, yeah. But if you are drawn to the Arctic, I recommend visiting the Winter Games sometime in February. Too much fun to describe here. Beautiful, amazing, lasting memories. Huge, huge races of snowmobiles. A fantastic mass start of dog team races. That is borders on hysteria and terror. Professional teams from all over the world. One of the interesting little phenomena, if you live up in that part of the woods, is that people do breed racing dogs, and they're small, odd little critter, a bit of greyhound in them. Now, I thought they were all going to be these big burly huskies, but these are little little creatures that seem to be just wild to run. That's what they do. If you put them in a harness, they're jumping up in the air as much as the harness will allow them. And they run in packs, they're great. But if you show the curiosity to, like, every Sunday there's a local race, you just show up and watch the races, and they have different heats for kids and heats for women and heats for the big boys and anybody. You know, it's great. People actually donate dogs to give you a start to develop your team. It's partly because they have so much breeding stock, and partly because that's just the nature of the people. Hospitality. It's like you've walked into a world of masons. But it's what they are. It's who they are. Maybe it's the draw of the north. Regardless, it's a wonderful experience. Here we have winter solstice upon us. Very, very quickly coming. In just about 8 minutes. So I want you all to be grab a glass of your favorite. The end of days may be here, but we might as well enjoy it with a bit of a smile. It's a time in which the sun is appearing at noon at its lowest altitude over the horizon. Up here in the northern hemisphere, it is in the northern hemisphere, and this is the southern solstice. The time at which the sun is at its southernmost point in the sky, which usually occurs in December 21st or 22nd. Oh my goodness, the 22nd is my anniversary. I think there's a message in that. The axial tilt of Earth and the gyroscopic effects of the planet's daily rotation keeps the axis of rotation pointed at the same point in the sky. Well, that's a bit deep even for us, don't you think? You face towards the sun and experiencing winter is faced away from the sun. The axes are faced away, our hemisphere. And in a half a year, we'll face toward the sun and we'll experience summer. And since the two hemispheres face opposite directions along the planetary pole, as one polar hemisphere experiences winter, the other is in summer, down south it is. More evident from high latitudes, a summer hemisphere's winter solstice occurs on the shortest day and longest night of the year, when the sun's daily maximum elevation in the sky is at its lowest. What day are we looking at? I'm looking at longest night and the shortest day. just as well. Solstice itself may have been a special moment in the annual cycle of the year, even during Neolithic times. That's even getting older than some of us. Astronomical events, which during ancient times controlled the mating of animals, sowing of crops, and metering of winter reserves between harvests, show how various cultural mythologies and traditions have arisen. This is attested by physical remains in the layouts of Neolithic and Bronze Age archaeological sites, such as Stonehenge in Britain and Newgrange in Ireland. The primary axis of both these monuments seems to have been carefully aligned on a sight line pointing to the winter solstice sunrise in Newgrange and the winter solstice sunset at Stonehenge. Significant in respect of Stonehenge is the fact that the great trilithon was erected outwards from the center of the monument, that its smooth, flat face was turned toward the midwinter sun. Winter solstice may have been immensely important because communities were not certain of living through the winter and had to be prepared during the previous 9 months. Starvation was common in winter between January and April. They were also known as the famine months. In temperate climates, the midwinter festival was the last feast celebration, especially before deep winter began. Most cattle were slaughtered so they would not have to be fed during the winter. So it was almost the only time of year when a fresh supply of meat was available. The majority of wine and beer made during the year was finally fermented and ready for drinking at this time. The concentration of the observances were not always on the day commencing at midnight or dawn, but the beginning of the pre-Romanized day, which falls on the previous eve. Since the event is seen as the reversal of the sun's ebbing presence in the sky, concepts of the birth and rebirth of sun gods have been common, and in cultures using winter solstice-based cyclic calendars, the year as reborn has been celebrated with regard to life, death, rebirth deities, or new beginning, such as Hagenay's Redding, a New Year cleaning tradition. Also, reversal is yet another usual theme, as in Saturnalia's slave and master roles. We come from so much superstition, not so very long ago, the Sami indigenous people of Finland and Sweden and Norway worship Baiwe, the sun goddess of fertility and sanity. She travels through the sky on a structure made of reindeer boats with her daughter Baiwe Nia to herald back the greenery on which the reindeer feed. On the winter solstice, her worshippers sacrifice white and female animals and thread meat onto sticks, which they bend into rings and tie with bright ribbon. They also cover the doorposts with butter so Biwe can eat it and begin her journey once again. Influenced by the ancient Greek Lenaea festival, Brumalia was an ancient Roman solstice festival honoring Bacchus, generally held for a month and ending in December 25th. The festival included drinking, and oh my goodness, merriment. The name is derived from the Latin word bruma, meaning shortest day or winter solstice. The festivals almost always occurred on the night of December 24th. In the ancient traditions of the Kalesh people of Pakistan, during winter solstice, the demigod returns to collect prayers and deliver them to Dazael, the supreme being. During this celebrations, women and girls are purified by taking ritual baths. The men pour water over their heads while they hold up a bed. Then the men and boys are purified with water and must not sit on chairs until evening when blood is sprinkled on their faces. Following this purification, a great festival begins with singing and dancing and bonfires and feasting and goat tripe and other delicacies. Christmas, or Christ Mass, is one of the most popular Christian celebrations, as well as the most globally recognized midwinter celebrations in the Northern Hemisphere. Christmas is the celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ, called the Son of God, the second person of the Holy Trinity, as well as Savior of the world. The birth is observed on December 25th, which was the Roman winter solstice upon establishment of the Julian calendar. Activities include feasting, midnight masses, and singing Christmas carols about the Nativity. Deeds and gift giving in the tradition of St. Nicholas or Santa Claus is also observed. Many observe the holiday for 12 days leading up to Epiphany. Even in Iran, Zoroastrians were so well known. Logically, Mayadrium is associated with Vehrman, the Amesha spent our holy immortal who created the primal bull and all cattle, and is associated with good plans and intentions. Mayadrium is celebrated in Day, EY, the 10th month of the Zoroastrian calendar, from the 16th to the 20th day. There are also speculations that by the Persian calendar may be celebrated on the last day of the Persian month, Azar, the longest night of the year, when forces of Heriman were associated to be at the peak of their strength. The next day, the first day of the month today, known as Koram Rus or Koreus, the day of sun, belongs to God. Since the days are getting longer and the nights shorter, this day marks the victory of sun over the darkness. The occasion was celebrated in the ancient Persian Dagon festival dedicated to Ahura Mazda and Mitra on the first day of the month day. The winter solstice festival are the extreme winter in Chinese and Japanese, Korea, Vietnam. It's one of the most important festivals celebrated by the Chinese and other East Asians during the Lunar solar term on or around December 21st, when sunshine is weakest and daylight shortest. It is the first day of the Dongzi solar term. The origin of this festival can be traced back to the yin and yang philosophy of balance and harmony in the cosmos. After this celebration, there will be days with longer daylight hours and therefore an increase in positive energy flowing in. The philosophical significance of this is symbolized by the I Ching, the hexagram, or returning. Traditionally, the Dongzi festival is also a time for the family to get together. One activity that occurs during these get-togethers, especially in the southern parts of China and in Chinese communities overseas, is the making and eating of tangwei, or balls of glutinous rice, which symbolize reunion. In Korea, similar balls of glutinous rice. In English, the denunciation is seelsum, is paired in a traditional porridge with sweet red bean. Pat Ujuk was believed to have a special power and sprayed around houses on winter solstice to repel sinister spirits. This practice was based on a traditional folklore in which the ghost of a man that used heat Pachuk comes haunting innocent villagers on the winter solstice. Now we're hearing about Mali and some of the conflicts going on there today. Ru is the December winter solstice ceremony of the Pays Dogon of Mali. It is the last harvest festival and celebrates the arrival of humanity from the sky god Amma via Nomo inside the Adunu Kora, or the Ark of the World. And Hanukkah. Now, also nowadays, usually spelled in modern Hebrew, also romanized as Hanukkah, Chanukah, instead of an H-A-N. Also known as the Festival of Lights, an 8-day Jewish holiday commemorating the rededication of the Second Temple in Jerusalem at the time of the Maccabean Revolt in the 2nd century BCE. Hanukkah is observed for 8 nights, starting on the 25th of Kislev, according to the Hebrew calendar, which may occur at any time from late November to late December in the Gregorian calendar. Festival is observed by the kindling of lights in a unique candelabrum, the 9-branch menorah, or Hanukkah, one additional light on each night of the holiday, progressing to 8 on the final night. Extra light, called the Shamash, is also lit each night for the purpose of lighting the others, and it's given a distinct location, usually above or below the rest. Shamash symbolically supplies light that may be used. There is discussion if Hanukkah should be classified as the winter solstice holiday. The Jewish calendar is neither solar nor lunar in nature, but exists as a balance between the two. As such, while events that are commemorated by Hanukkah happen on or around the solstice because of the use of the lunar calendar, Hanukkah is sometimes celebrated as early as late November. And in Scotland, I'll try and finish up with this. The new celebration of Scotland is called Ogmanay. The name derives from the old Scots name for Yule gifts of the Middle Ages. The early Ogmanay celebrations were originally brought to Scotland by the invading and occupying Norse, who celebrated the solstice of New Year. Britain celebrated the New Year on March 25th, or Lady Day. 1600, with the Scottish application of the January 1 New Year and the Church's persistent suppression of the solstice celebration, the holiday traditions moved to December 31st. The most widespread Scottish custom is the practice of first footing, which starts immediately after midnight on New Year's Day. This involves being the first person, usually tall and dark-haired, to cross the threshold of a friend and neighbor, and often involves the giving of symbolic gifts such as salt, which is less common today, coal, shortbread, whiskey, and black bun, and fruit pudding, intended to bring different kinds of luck to the householder. Food and drinks such as gifts are often flies, cemetery, then given to the guests. And often flies cemetery. Cemetery. Flies cemetery. That's a flies graveyard. It's a square. It's a fruit flies and currants and fly cakes. Flies cemetery are names used in various parts of the United Kingdom for sweet pastries filled with currants and raisins, which are flies in the graveyard. The formal name is fruit slice or fruit squares. In Northern Ireland, the formal term is currant squares. In the northeast of England, they are called fly cakes or fly pie. Mixture is served as sweet mince pie, which are traditionally eaten at crisp time in the United Kingdom. So, traditionally, Ogmanay was a day of preparation. The celebrations did not begin until after midnight and the new year. It was like many winter festivals, really celebrated the end of winter and the return of the sun. Needless to say, there's a connection between the holiday Christmas and the pre-Christian holidays. And really, if you are a thorough historian, the connection goes back. It makes sense that from the beginning of observation and time, men and women have understood the importance of light, light being the source of all life, the sun being the source of heat. Without heat, the crops don't grow. The crops and the animals starve, and you and I don't survive. You have a connection. Freemasonry is not unknown to us. This connection is often cited, although we may not be brought to our attention as a phenomenon of Christian thought. We have a lot on our walls that linger until we take the time to open them up, to ask questions, to begin our own journey of understanding. Today, the world is a little sad place. I hope you don't mind, brother. It's hard to ignore 20 very, very young children being cut down before they've really had much of a chance to make their footprint known on the face of the earth. What do we say? Words don't describe it. Is a nation's tolerance now spent? Are they able to refine the balance of rights, the consequences on innocent people? I don't know if I think that simple process. I might not know what to do. Easy from outside looking in to find, define the serious complications, but it's tragic trying to get the idea of 20 small children. It was 6 or 7 adults. Imagine this. Principals and teachers running to try and confront this intruder being literally cut down. They weren't foot soldiers. They weren't armed. They weren't in battle. They're going about their business, educating little people. Probably excited about Christmas coming and Santa Claus and being together with family. I don't know. I'm thinking, does it help if we share the morning of a small town in Connecticut? I think it probably does. I think the world is less today than it was the hour before those shootings occurred. Keep a good thought when you're with family and friends. Hold them just a little closer. They are enormous dear to us. If there's anything, there's nothing good, I think, coming to this type of thing, except for us to realize the importance of these relationships and how brief it all is. You and I come and go. The first sound here is the heartbeat of mother. The last sound is our own heartbeat. We're born with nothing. We leave with nothing. So what have we got to lose? Our good deeds, the impact that we have on people, the actions. Do you mind if I talk to you a little bit today? It's great to have you with us. Just before Christmas, we've got another show on Christmas, and I'm looking forward to it. Last night, hosted by the fellows of Ashler Lodge in Tilsonburg. Just a very, very warm reception. When you get a chance to visit that lodge, the room is remarkable. It is a staggeringly, for me, with no exaggeration, a beautiful, beautiful piece of craftsmanship in putting that room together. That wasn't the best part. The best part was the hospitality, the goodwill, the bonhomme, as we say here in Canada. These fellows are amazing. Sat down at a wonderful tradition of theirs, a crisp potluck. And I can tell you, it was it had all bells and whistles. Just, yeah. So to those fellows, I want to thank them for the honor and privilege of being able to speak in Lodge. And to the Worshipful Master, he created a wonderful opportunity. I got a chance to see our good friend, Paul Woods. Anyway, to Tilsonburg, that surprised me how much energy and growth happening in that city. And to the fellows in the North Wilton District and South Wilton Districts. Extend that to them, and there's a very, very Merry Christmas. Do you want to get into things foolish, or things a little bit Masonic this morning? I know some of you are downloading this. And by the way, more and more of you are downloading this, so I'm imagining you've got this carried around with you, and I think that's amazing. And the son of a gun, we're getting more and more live listeners. I'm worried about you boys. I thought I was the only one daft enough to want to think about things Masonic at this time of the morning, but it's so relaxing. It just seems perfect time for us to be together. Anytime, of course, the perfect time for us to be here. Let's talk about some things Masonic going on. We've had a very busy year. I think we can see in the province of Ontario, personally, things are moving forward, in my opinion. I would like to see stronger support for our Grand Lodge. I would like to see the unification of our ideas and the realization that the committees, under the guidance of our some very, very dedicated Masons, and I think anyone out there would argue that there is a dedication. And there's different shifting expectation going on around the large performance. The fellows are expecting that, and deliverance. It's amazing. Been careful guidance for our successive grandmasters, but in my mind, I'm beginning to see continuity. I'm beginning to see connectiveness. And maybe I just hadn't been looking for it before. But this may be a time for you and I in 2013 to show our support for the Grand Lodge by taking some action. When a motion comes for us, before we immediately exercise what we believe, we stop and pause. Albert Pike tells us that while we have a great deal of information at our fingertips, he felt that the majority of decisions that we make are not based on facts, but on what we believe. I sort of made the hair on my arm stand up a bit. I'm thinking, Al, what are you saying, Brother Pike? He's saying that we haven't really moved very far from superstitious belief. Surely to goodness we can use facts and science to help guide us. We probably would be better off not to be rash about it, but and not to be impudent about the but when we're faced with the wings in Lodge, we had a question too, of course, to your advice here, the star chamber of Masonic and Companions. Should we expect that the Grand Lodge has done its homework, has done its research, and for reasons that we may not always understand, they need a motion to carry forward in order for the work of Grand Lodge and Freemasonry to progress. How could we ever expect them to overcome the strength of the beliefs of the thousands of men who attend the annual communication and vote on matters in open arm, open democracy? How could we expect that? Well, I think it's a bit, for me, that would be a bit narcissistic. It was to expect an entire organization to think that they can dispel my belief system. But it would be equally naive of me to think that that was, that I should not be aware of the facts on which decisions are based. I can't really make decisions unless I know some background information. But if there are gaps, perhaps something has to go back to the drawing board. Not to say, oh, but I need a little more that I feel confident in making the decision. But against that context, there's always that sense for me, and I think for a lot of you, that comes a requirement of trust. Can we inevitably support our Grand Lodge? Let's see how we do this year. Let's see what our performance is like on the floor when motions are brought forward. Let's see how they're communicated to, if there is sufficient background information. And of course, they would say there's always more. So there has to be some qualifiers. Is there a reasonable amount of information? Is the motion reasonable? We should, I guess, presume that it's been thoughtfully deliberated because of the structure of committees and the talents of the people involved. These are not foolish people. These are truly dedicated people. And I believe, from my experience, that they weigh things from all sides, as many perspectives as they possibly can. Maybe that challenge for 2013 delighted me to see if I can exercise that sense of that faith in my lodge, my grandmaster, and assume that I can, and I do have a duty to support. You know that I personally don't think that exercise of our principles matter very much when it's easy. It's easy as a matter of convenience. And I think the true test of Masonic principles is when they can, when it's hard, when instinct, the circumstance, our experience, the limits of our experience telling us not to do something. And that we pull back and make decisions based on principles that have come to us from Masonic study. And I tend to think that the truest Masonic nature comes forward when it's very difficult. When all so-called reason seems to be telling us not to do something. And yet we act. Maybe it is that act of kindness, Masonic kindness I'm talking about so frequently. I want to talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the winter season. I hope you're ready for it. And what would be better than for you to sit back and run just a little verbal on a little bit of information so we can continue our discussion. I like the way you're handling your. I like the way you're creating counterpoints and questions for me. Thank you very much for the advice that you've been talk to you a little about the candidate. This comes from The Lost Keys of Freemasonry by Emily P. Hall. There comes a time in the growth of every living individual thing when it realizes with dying consciousness that it is prisoner. While apparently free to move and have its beginning, its being, the struggling life cognizes through ever greater vehicles its own limitations. It is at this point that man cries with greater insistence to be liberated from the binding ties which, though invisible to mortal eyes, still chain him with bonds far more terrible than those of any physical prison. Is this one talking about my ego? Let's see. Many have read the story of prisoner of Chong, who paced back and forth in the narrow confines of his prison cell, while the blue watch rolled ceaselessly above his head, and the only sound that broke the stillness of his eternal night was the constant swishing and lap of the waves. We pity the prisoner in his physical tomb, and we are sad at heart, for we know how life loves liberty. But there is one prisoner whose plight is far worse than those of Earth. He has not even the narrow confines of a prison cell around him. He cannot pace ceaselessly to and fro and wear ruts in the cobblestones of his dungeon floor. That eternal prisoner is life incarnate within the dark stone walls of matter. Without a single ray to brighten the blast of his fate, he fights eternally, praying in the dark confines, gloomy walls for light and opportunity. This is the eternal prisoner who, with the ceaseless ages of cosmic unfoldment, through forms unnumbered in species now unknown, strives eternally to liberate himself from the self-conscious expression, the birthright of a very created thing. He awaits day when, standing upon the rocks now from his sleepless tomb, he may rise, his arms to have faith in the sunlight of spiritual freedom, free to join sparkling atoms and dancing light beings released from the bonds of prison wall and tomb. Around life, that wondrous germ in the heart of every living thing, that sacred prisoner in his gloomy cell, that master builder, laid away in the grave matter, has been built the wondrous legend of the Holy Sepulchre. Under allegories unburied, the mystic philosopher of the ages perpetuated the wonderful story. And among the craft masons, it forms the mystic ritual of Hiram, the master builder, murdered in his temple by the laborers who should serve him as he labored to perfect the dwelling place of his God. Matter is the tomb. It is the dead wall of substance not yet awakened to the pulsing energies of the spirit. It exists in many degrees and forms, not only in the chemical elements which form the salts of our universe, but in finer and more subtle substances. These, though expressing through emotion and thought, are still beings of the world of form. These substances form the gate cross of matter, which opposes the growth of all things, and by opposition makes all growth possible. It's a little deep. It is the gate cross of hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, and carbon, upon which even the life germ of protoplasm is crucified and suspended in agony. Molecular chemistry not lost to manly evolved. These substances are incapable of giving it adequate expression. The spirit within cries out freedom. Freedom to be, to express, to manifest its true place in the plane of cosmic unfoldment. It is this great yearning within the heart of man which sets him slowly onward toward the gate, the temple. It is this inner urge the greater light which brought into being through the laws of necessity, the great cosmic Masonic lodge dedicated to those seeking union with powers of light, that their prison walls might be removed. This shall not be discarded. It must be raised into union with the life. Each dead, crystallized atom of the human body must be set vibrating and spinning to a higher rate of consciousness. Through purification, through knowledge, and through service to his fellow man, the candidate sequentially unfolds these mystic properties, building better and more perfect bodies through which his higher life secures even greater manifestation. The expression of man through constructive thought, emotion, and actions liberates the higher nature from these which, in their crystallized state, are incapable of giving him his natural opportunities. If this really is a way of saying that we are freed by our own actions, it's an interesting way of looking at the world. As in the Kabbalah, we learn, of course, through the notions of the Tree of Life, the connectedness, the harmonics of all things and all people, and all times that seem to penetrate the veil of time. And instead of living in a three-dimensional world, we live in this with this fourth dimension, this spiritual dimension that seems to be connected to the other three, height, width, and depth, of course. If we are connected, how do we know this? In a state of mind? Or is there proofs? Well, again, this would run contrary to notions that we are all supreme and all control over everything that is. This would suggest that as we rethink that notion, we are part of everything that is. We are particles like everything else around us. In Freemasonry, this crystallized substance of matter is called the grave and represents the Holy Sepulchre, according to Hall. This is the grave within which the builder lies. Master's word, and it is this builder, our great master, whom we must seek and raise from the dead. The noble Son of Light cries out to us in every expression of matter. Every stone marks his resting place. And the spirit of Acacia promises that through the long winter of spiritual darkness, when the sun does not shine for man, this light still awaits the day of liberation, when each one of us shall raise him by the grip of the Grand Master, the true grip of a Master Mason. So if we don't see it now, is there any comfort in knowing that this is perhaps our period of darkness? Long winter of spiritual darkness, when there is no light, no insight. But first, we have an awareness of that. Now, I suspect it requires our fullest attention, our observation, as we move forward, realize how much we don't know. Perhaps that's truly what makes us insightful. How can one be insightful unless one embraces humility? There's no arrogance in insight. It's a power beyond. As the age rolled by, the deep desire to be greater, to live better, and to think God's thoughts builds within ourselves the qualifications of a Kennedy, who, when asked why he takes the path, truly answered if he knew mentally the things he feels. I hear a voice that cried out to me from flora and fauna, from the stones, from the clouds, from the very heaven itself. Each fiery atom spinning and twisting in cosmos cries out to me with the voice of my master. I hear Harmabiff, my grandmaster, crying in his agony, the agony of life hidden within the darkness of its prison walls, seeking for the expression which I have denied it, laboring to bring closer the day of its liberation. And I have learned to know that I am responsible for those walls. My daily actions are the things which, as ruffians and traitors, are murdering my God. My daily actions. Is this the notion that we are the embodiment of the deity? Remember, other days we've talked about the temple being constructed as the temple of the mind. Again, to our notions of knowledge, wisdom, and spirituality, and consciousness. I want to thank you for joining me this morning. We'll come back and pick this up. Look for me, and I'll look for you for Christmas. In the meantime, I hope each and every one of you will commit many random acts of chronic kindness. And I look forward to seeing you soon. You take care of yourselves and your love. Aha! Merry Christmas, everyone. Merry Christmas.
think so little of me. They allow you to be. When you I can hear a lark somewhere begin to sing about it. There's no love song finer, but how strange the change. Every time.